915-9636 is the telephone number, 855-915-WMFO. It is just me tonight. So the typical it is just me rules apply. If you want to call in and comment on the show, I'll say this. This is the way to do it. Call during a break. Call when I'm playing music. Call when a commercial is on. Call, or we don't do commercials. Call when I'm playing a vintage commercial or a PSA. And then I've got time to answer the phone, take your calls, take your thoughts, all that sort of thing. It is not that I don't want to hear from my listeners. I love talking to the listeners. I love having you be a part of the show. It's just requires more arms, one more microphone, and one more head than I currently possess to be able to answer calls live on the air and talk about everything that's going on. So that's where we are. Happy preseasoning. It is preseasoning. The NFL preseason kicks off tomorrow night on NBC with the Hall of Fame game. Bad football is better than no football. Ask anyone who's a Jets fan. So we've got that to look forward to. And one more presidential debate to endure tonight, if you are so inclined. If it's anything like last night, they won't actually start answering questions until about 8:30. So you can just stay with the big picture until then. You know, they're gonna have their pre-debate hype fest going for a while over there on CNN, because I guess that's what they do. They are CNN. Hopefully you managed to avoid the worst of the weather that was blowing around this afternoon. Got pretty hairy over where I was for a little while. We had some really, really heavy downpours, thunder and lightning, strong wind blowing around, and then the temperature dropped by 20 degrees. And hopefully the temperature will choose to stay down at this level and the humidity will push out of here and we can enjoy a nice August. I don't expect that's actually going to happen, but it would be nice if it did, right? You know it would. Anyway, Shea Spillane will not be with us tonight. You just got me. Shea will be back soon. So let's get into everything worth talking about from this past week. CBS Boston, this is how you don't commit crime, kids. Former MGM slot machine technician accused of stealing $22,000 from Springfield Casino. Rule number one, don't steal from casinos. Rule number two, don't steal from casinos. The best case scenario, if you get caught stealing from a casino, is that they turn you over to the police and you go to jail. That is the best case scenario. A former slot machine technician, this is from CBS Boston, at MGM Springfield has been indicted for allegedly stealing $22,000 from the casino. Salvador Montalvo Jr., 54 and old enough to know better, is charged with larceny of property and making false entries in corporate books, Attorney General Mara Healey announced Tuesday. The West Springfield man will be arraigned in Hampton Superior Court at a later date. Here is the scam. It is believed that between August 2018 and January 2019, Montalvo took out nearly $24,000 from the casino cashier to conduct tests on slot machines. He allegedly only returned about $2,000 to the casino and deposited the rest into a personal checking account. Now, Mr. Montalvo Jr., did not do this in one fell swoop. This is between August 2018 and January 2019. So it took him about 6 months to figure out what Mr. Montalvo was up to. Montalvo is also accused of forging his supervisor's signatures on withdrawal forms. Healey said MGM Springfield fully cooperated with the investigation. Let me clarify that statement for you. What Attorney General Healey meant to say is MGM called her and said, we have all of the evidence that this person did this. Please come and arrest them. Because that is the best possible thing that will happen to you if you get caught stealing at a casino. The worst possible thing that will happen to you if you get caught stealing at a casino is probably something that you do not want to experience under any circumstances. So the rule that we learn is whether it is the MGM Grand or it is the Encore Boston, do not steal from a casino. you will get caught. Casinos are set up to make sure that you get caught if you do this. And bad things will happen to you. If you are lucky, they will turn you over to the police. That assumes they don't decide they want to make an example out of you. And that is the worst case scenario. You definitely do not want to be in that situation with the casino, because that's where, you know, I don't want to accuse anybody of anything here. But there are situations where you might find yourself floating in the Mystic River against your will. So don't steal from the casino. In the wake of the accident in New Hampshire last month that killed 7 motorcycle riders, there have been a lot of questions about what's been going on at the Department of Motor, the Registry of Motor Vehicles. In Massachusetts, it is a registry. In your state, it may be known as a Department of Motor Vehicles. These are the folks that issue driver's licenses and say who can and cannot get on the road. Last week, there was supposed to be a hearing up on Beacon Hill where employees of the Massachusetts RMV, Registry of Motor Vehicles, sat down in front of our elected leaders and explained how it was that no out-of-state drunk driving information had been processed for about 2 years. About a 2-year backlog of unprocessed filings. So you get pulled over for DUI in Connecticut. Connecticut sends a note to Massachusetts and says, hey, we got your resident for DUI. You might want to do something with this. Or Florida or California, wherever it happens. All the states are linked. Okay, so if you get a ticket in another state, if you have a summons in another state, if you have a warrant out for your arrest in another state, and you get pulled over in Massachusetts, the cops are generally speaking going to know this, you would think. That did not happen in this case, and Associated Press was there for the hearing yesterday. The hearings went on again today. I haven't heard anything about anything coming out of today. Plenty came out of yesterday. There is plenty here for you as a resident of this state to be irritated by, maybe even angry enough to cast a vote for or against someone. From the Associated Press, Mass RMV knew of backlog years before deadly crash. Officials within the Massachusetts Registry of Motor Vehicles grappled for years without success. It's a government agency, ladies and gentlemen. To clear chronic backlogs in the processing of notifications sent by other states of infractions by Massachusetts drivers, according to testimony on Tuesday at an oversight hearing prompted by a crash that killed 7 motorcyclists in New Hampshire. Members of the legislature's Transportation Committee sought to learn why information that Vladimir Zhukovsky had been arrested for drunken driving in Connecticut weeks before the June 21st crash, which could have triggered a suspension of his commercial driver's license, was not acted upon by the Massachusetts agency. Registry officials acknowledged that tens of thousands of such out-of-state notices have gone unprocessed for years, instead left to pile up in boxes stored in a state office. Oh, this used to be Bob's office, but this is where we keep all the paperwork that we don't have time for now. Quote, in the midst of all of this, 7 families experienced an unimaginable tragedy, and they didn't deserve explanations or excuses, said Aaron Devaney in explaining Tuesday her decision to resign as head of the agency days after the New Hampshire crash exposed the lapses. Quote, they deserve to have someone being accountable and acknowledge that the service that the Registry of Motor Vehicles provided was unacceptable in this instance. So rather than stand and face the music and say, yeah, you know what, we got a problem here, Aaron Devaney ran away. This happened. She knew exactly. She was gone before any of this came up, because she knew. She knew exactly what had happened. She knew that there was an office somewhere in a state building full of unprocessed DUI complaints from all over the country. She knew. They didn't deserve explanations or excuses. Well, okay, I will give you that. No, they don't deserve explanations or excuses. They deserve to hear that you fell down on the job, that your agency was not doing what your agency was tasked to do. Instead, you got up and left. You ran away and hoped that nobody would call you back in over this. Well, have fun in front of the legislature, Aaron Devaney. By the way, enjoy the lawsuit that is probably coming your way as well. Devaney testified that when she was appointed by Republican Governor Charlie Baker to lead the agency in 2015, no system existed for processing out-of-state notices. Can we stop right there? Aaron Devaney was appointed head of the Massachusetts Registry of Motor Vehicles, which is networked with registries and police all over the country. And she walks in 2015 and discovers that in our connected internet information superhighway age, there is no system to process out-of-state notices. So basically, if you were a Massachusetts driver, you can rack up all the DUIs you want all over the country. As long as you don't rack them up in Massachusetts, nothing's going to happen to you. You get to keep driving. 4 years. 3.5. I don't know what month she was appointed, but at the time that she resigned, we'll say 3.5 years you had to fix this problem. It did not get fixed. The following year, this would be 2016, she assigned the task to the Merit Rating Board, which historically has been responsible for reviewing in-state violations by Massachusetts drivers and imposing any insurance surcharges warranted. So her agency can't seem to figure out how to do this. They're like, yeah, we got these boxes of things over here. Nobody's looked at them for years. And what's their response? We'll send the boxes somewhere else. Send them to another state agency. Let them be their problem. While some progress was subsequently made in addressing the backlog, glitches during the installation of a new computer system at the registry in March 2018 prompted a decision to focus on the handling of in-state violations at the expense of out-of-state notices because the board could not, quote, fix it all at the same time, end quote, Devaney said. It's always those computer glitches, those pesky computer glitches. For whatever reason, the computer says, no, computer's not working. We can't do our job because the computer's not working. Are you kidding me? Only in government could you get away with this. Can you imagine walking into a hospital, bleeding heavily, you're going to die, and the hospital is sitting there saying, yeah, we can't treat you because the computer's not working. Can you imagine running any kind of a business, all right? I work in digital marketing. Everything that we do is on computers, okay? I can never sit there and say to one of my clients, I couldn't help you today because the computers weren't working. No, I have to go find a computer that works, all right? I have to go find a solution. And I understand, the registry, you're a government agency. You have limited resources, okay? This is a point where you put your hand up and you say, hey, Governor Baker, remember that thing you appointed me to? We haven't processed an out-of-state DUI in 3 years. I need some people. Like, go hire some temps. Bring the National Guard in here for their 1 weekend a month. Let them do data entry. There are so many ways that you could have solved this, and you didn't. Breanne Dwyer, an auditor with the Massachusetts Department of Transportation, which oversees the registry, testified she told registry officials in March that she had discovered within the new computer system an open queue. You're going to love this. An open queue containing 12,899 unprocessed out-of-state notifications. We'll call it, let's round up, shall we? 12,900 unprocessed out-of-state notifications. 12,900 DUIs reported by other states that were never acted upon. Now, I don't think this probably doesn't affect 12,900 individual drivers. People who get caught driving under the influence tend to do it a lot. okay? Vladimir Zhukovsky had been pulled over for DUI more than once. That's the way it goes. People who drive drunk, people who drive on drugs, they do it all the time. You take their driver's license away from them, they still do it. They'll find a way to get behind the wheel. And unless you're going to put a breath-sensing interlock into every car sold in the United States, you're not going to solve that problem, at least where alcohol is concerned. They don't work quite as well on marijuana and other things. 12,899 unprocessed out-of-state notifications. That is, this is a speculative number, okay? But let's say that represents 12,000 people who had racked up DUIs out of state who probably did not belong on the road for the last 3 years. This is how you wind up with 7 people dead in a motorcycle accident in New Hampshire. In an internal memo made public by the legislative committee, Dwyer said she asked Thomas Bowes, head of the Merit Rating Board, who was responsible for entering the information. Dwyer said she asked Thomas Bowes, head of the Merit Rating Board, who was responsible for entering the information, and that Bowes responded, quote, nobody, explaining his department had not been given sufficient staff resources to address the backlog amid the ongoing computer issues. Asked hypothetically by one lawmaker if correcting the reporting issues promptly might have prevented the loss of life in the New Hampshire crash, Dwyer responded, quote, it's possible. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt on that, because just because you suspend Vladimir Zhirovsky's commercial driver's license, that doesn't mean his employer is looking for that CDL every single time Zhirovsky goes out. So employers are supposed to, before you get behind the wheel of a commercial vehicle, your employer is supposed to make sure that your commercial driver's license is in good standing. And if it's not, you don't get to drive. The majority of employers do this. Not every employer does this 100% of the time. And for all we know, Zhirovsky is going to go find somebody who plays a little bit fast and loose with the rules and goes and drives for them. So you can't make a direct, solid connection between Zhirovsky having a CDL, an active commercial driver's license, in his wallet, and that accident. If you take his driver's license away, maybe he's still there under the same circumstances. Hard to say. What we can say is that his commercial driver's license should have been suspended. And had it been suspended, there is a lesser chance, possibly, that he would have been on the road that day. Registry officials have said internal review prompted by the deadly crash has resulted in license suspensions for more than 1,600 Massachusetts motorists. Let's go back and look at some math again, kids. I know math is the least sexy thing that we do on the show, okay? 1,600 Massachusetts motorists have had their licenses suspended. 12,900 unprocessed out-of-state notifications. 1,600 Massachusetts motorists have had their licenses suspended. Either those 1,600 motorists do a lot of DUI, or you only got about 75% of the people off the road who are supposed to be off the road. What I'm saying is there is a big gap between 12,900 unprocessed violations and 1,600 people getting their licenses suspended. I do say more than 1,600, so less than 1,700. Still a big gap between 12,900 and less than 1,700. And apparently this is ongoing and more people are having their licenses suspended, but this is where we are, okay? This happened back in June. This happened in the middle of June. Here we are. Tomorrow will be August. And we've caught up with about 25% of the backlog in a month. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever done any data entry. I know I have. And I know that a few competent data entry people, generally speaking, could get through a backlog like that in 6 weeks without question. You wouldn't even have to have them working night and day. You know, you got 3 people in there. They ought to be able to process 500-600 of these things a day, right? Depends on how complicated they are. You know, you figure you're going to do 10 of these things an hour, right? 6 hours. We'll give them time for lunch and all the rest of that. Should be done by now. The legislative panel heard testimony for more than 7 hours Tuesday after its initial attempt to hold the hearing on July 22nd was quickly suspended when the Baker administration declined to make certain officials available to testify, citing a desire not to interfere with an ongoing independent audit of the registry. I hope Suzanne Bump is involved in this because she gets results. On Monday, however, Baker told reporters that he expected any officials asked to appear before the committee to do so and without any limitations on their testimony. Some Democrats have criticized Baker, claiming he failed to properly oversee the critical state agency. Okay, Democrats, please stop. Okay, the governor cannot be involved in the day-to-day operations of every single state agency. This is where you appoint somebody and say, go run that and take care of that. And if there is anything that I need to know, please come and see me about it. There is no evidence whatsoever that Aaron Devenny, who is probably a friend of Baker's, who is probably a hack hire, ever said anything to the governor about this backlog of out-of-state DUIs. 7 people are dead as a result of this. There will be lawsuits. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts will be sued by these families for gross negligence. And, well, they should be, because everything that I'm getting out of this hearing right now is negligence of the highest order. And it's not just negligence. Because negligence is failure to do something. There is a near pathological lack of caring exhibited by the people involved in this. So Aaron Devenny gets hired to run the DMV, Registry of Motor Vehicles, Department of Motor Vehicles, discovers this backlog and says, how do we fix this? We don't know. So she hands it off to the Merit Rating Board and says, hey, you deal with it. You deal with this. Merit Rating Board gets all these boxes full of unfiled, out-of-state DUIs. And they just let them sit there. And you just say, yeah, we can't deal with that. We don't have the resources for that. So Agency 1 passes the buck to Agency 2, and Agency 2 is sitting around, what are we supposed to do with that? It's not our responsibility. We don't have anybody to deal with this. And apparently, the Merit Rating Board did make some effort. They cleared out some backlog, but then there's new backlog that's been gathering since 2018. You cannot run a state like this. You cannot run a state like this. And what we're seeing over and over and over again in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is our public agencies falling down on the job. This is beyond appalling. This really is beyond appalling. That we find ourselves dealing with a state agency that can't put their hand up and say, you know what, get me some temps. We have a problem. We have a lot of DUI people out on the road. Somebody's going to get killed. And if you can't get the governor to do anything and you can't get the legislature to do anything, you can always pick up the phone. You can always call up the Globe Spotlight team. You can always call up the Boston Herald and say, hey, I got a story for you. Come check out Office 319 in the state building over here. See what you find. There's 13,000 unfiled out-of-state DUIs in there. This is a public safety crisis. Because it is. 7 motorcyclists died because these state officials couldn't do their jobs. And not only couldn't they do their jobs, they didn't care. They did not care to do their jobs. Because somebody who cared would have put their hand up. Somebody who cared would have said, hey, listen, this has to get fixed. Get me resources. And if you don't get the resources, the first thing you do is say, you know what? You get me the resources or I'm out of here. And then if that doesn't work, that's when you drop a dime. That's when you call your friendly media people. Because they're sitting around, they're looking for stories. They don't get anything out of state officials around here. They're looking for stories. The Globe, the Herald, they would have eaten this up. Herald would have had a field day with this. Howie Carr would have got 3 months worth of radio shows out of this. Nobody cared. That is the problem that we have. They don't. They check it. They clock in at 9 o'clock. They leave at 5 p.m. Some things happen in between. They go away to conferences on the public dime and stay in nice hotels and eat lobster thermidor once or twice a year. You know, it's all about information sharing and networking, modernizing our registry of motor vehicles. But they can't deal with this backlog because there's a computer glitch. And we have to prioritize the people getting pulled over for DUIs in Massachusetts that apparently they couldn't process, right? We don't have enough resources to process the number of DUIs that come in. Well, somebody go get the resources. Somebody agitate for the resources. Somebody call up Mike Beaudet. Put your hand up. Say, hey, I'm drowning here. We've got drunk drivers on the road. We've got drug drivers on the road. It's out of control. 1 month later, 6 weeks later, 6 weeks after the accident, we've caught up with about 25% of these people. Appalling. Absolutely appalling. And you, if you are a Massachusetts resident within the sound of my voice, this is your fault. This is my fault. We own this. We did this. We are responsible for the deaths of those seven motorcyclists. Because we keep voting the same people into office in this state, despite the fact that no state agency seems to be able to do a damn thing. There is no accountability. That's our fault as voters, because we don't demand that accountability. We don't call up our representatives, our state reps and our state senators and say, hey, what are you doing about this? When is this going to be fixed? I don't want, every time I get on the road, I don't want to have to worry that there's 1,000 drunk drivers on the road next to me. They work for us. We are their employers. When they fail, we fail. And they didn't just fail. They didn't care. Now, overall, I think Charlie Baker's doing a pretty good job. And there was some coverage that came out, you know, around the time that this backlog and this problem with the out-of-state DUIs came up, where people were saying, oh, that's going to cost Charlie Baker re-election. At the time, I blew it off, and I said, you know, I don't know that that's true. Charlie Baker does more good than harm. And he's very good at sticking his finger in the air and figuring out which way the wind blows and getting on board with what the people want. So maybe you don't need to throw Charlie Baker out, but you got to let him know we demand accountability. As voters, I don't care who you vote for. I don't care what party you are. I don't care what your individual views on things are. You're going to hear more about my individual views than you ever want to hear. But you've got to demand accountability. This is one of the reasons I like Suzanne Bump, because Suzanne Bump, who is the state auditor, she goes into an agency and everybody is freaked out because she is going to find every bit of corruption and every problem and every uncounted penny that has fallen through the cracks in those agencies. Which is why I say I hope she's looking into this. Because Suzanne Bump is somebody that I trust. She has done a great job for the Commonwealth. And she holds these agencies accountable. Because she takes that mandate personally. She understands that she was elected to do that. That's why we keep putting her in office. It can't just be her. It has to be all of us. When these things happen, we need to get mad. We need to go to our elected officials and say, how the hell did this happen? What are you doing about it? And by the way, they're going to be out, okay? The summer street fair season is in full swing. And the fall street fair season is coming up hot on its heels. This is not an election year all over the place, so you're not necessarily going to see as many candidates as you normally would. But summer recess is on. They're going to be back in the district. They're going to be back at the coffee shops in your hometown. They're going to be having their open houses. They're going to be having their town meetings. They're going to be having their office hours. You go in and you start telling those elected leaders, fix this or you're gone. And guess what? You're going to start to see some accountability out of these state agencies. And it is long past due. Whether we're talking about this travesty over the Registry of Motor Vehicles, 12,900 unfiled DUIs, okay? That's probably 11,000 people who should not have been on the road in this state driving around because they chose to drink and drive in another state. Whether it's that or this ongoing tragicomic attempt to run a public transportation system, whether it is the MBTA or Keolis, where today they came out and they said, well, you know what? We can't run the trains as fast because the heat is bad for the tracks. They always have an excuse. Summer, it's too hot. The trains can't run. Fall, leaves on the rails. They can't, slippery rail. They can't run. Winter, snow on the rails. They can't run. When the hell can the trains run? Can the trains only run on a beautiful 70-degree, low humidity, no breeze over 5 miles per hour day? Because it seems to me that the MBTA ran a hell of a lot better when I was a kid, whether we're talking about the commuter rail, the subways, whatever, ran a hell of a lot better 20 years ago than it does now. And when I see this lack of care, this lack of concern over 12,900 unfiled DUIs for Massachusetts drivers, and I see Keolis and the MBTA fall down on their face on a near daily basis, I got to ask myself, who's in charge over here? People who don't care. They don't care. Keolis doesn't care. They have the contract. MBTA officials, they don't care. What else are you going to ride? What are your other choices? No parking left anywhere in Boston. So you can either pay money every day to take an Uber, or you can put up with the ongoing horrors of the MBTA. And I hear people complain. I hear them complaining all the time. You turn on the radio, you pick up a newspaper, turn on the TV, complain, 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 complain. What is it getting you? What are the letters to the editor getting you? What are the tweets getting you? What are the comments on Boston.com getting you? And the Boston Globe and the Herald? Nothing. The only way you are going to get a result, the only way, is to go talk to your elected leaders who are going to be in your towns and tell them, fix this or you're gone. Fix this or I'm going to vote for somebody who will fix this. That is your money that these agencies are wasting. This is our fault, ultimately. You want to know why the MBTA is bad? It's your fault. You want to know why the registry gets away with this? It's your fault. Because we sit around and we worry about what's on Twitter and what's on Facebook and what's on Instagram and making heart hands at the new craft beer cafe that just opened. And oh, I'm in all the right places. Meanwhile, all the infrastructure in the state is falling down around us. State agencies can't get anything done. And we bitch online about it. Politicians don't care. They especially don't care if we bitch about it online and then reelect them because they have a little letter I next to their names. It is time for accountability. It is our fault. We, the people, are ultimately the caretakers of this state and this government and these agencies. It is our fault that this registry mess up happened. It is our fault that the MBTA is a joke. And you're not going to fix it by filling out online surveys. You're not going to fix it by telling somebody from WCVB that you're upset. You're going to fix it by looking your state representatives in the eye and saying, you fix this or you're gone. And believe it or not, the more people who say it, the better. But it's not going to take a lot of people to say it to make them really scared up on Beacon Hill. But you got to say it. You got to look those elected representatives in the eye and you've got to say, you fix this or you're gone. And while you're at it, tell them to legalize fireworks because Lord knows, being one of the three states where that is not a thing is driving me up a wall. 855-915-9636. It is WMFO Medford. I am Derek Gary. It is The Big Picture with you until 9 o'clock tonight on the Tal. Mikey D will be coming in with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. And speaking of the Boston music scene, you may have heard that the Barron has been sold. And if you are a tough student, or if you are in the Somerville, Medford areas, you know, even if you're from beyond that, if you're from pretty much anywhere around Boston, you know the importance of the Burren in the local community. Widely heralded as one of the best Irish bars in the state. Great live music, great Irish music, right there in the heart of Davis Square. Food is good. If you're gonna ask me, and this is me being totally and perfectly honest here, the food at the Burren is fine, but I hear people rave about it, and I got to say to myself, you've never eaten real food, have you? Because it's good. It's above average pub fare. But it's not, they're not winning any awards, okay? There's no Henry Beard Award coming in over here. They're not getting a Michelin star. You know, it's decent pub food. You can find better if you know where to look. I may have something to say about that later on in the show tonight, and stick around for that in What's Hot. But it's fine. You know, the food is fine. As an institution, as a bar, it's fantastic. I love the Burren. I've spent a lot of time in the Burren. I've performed at the Burren. I've been a patron at the Burren. It's a great bar. Well, from the Boston Globe, big changes could be coming to the heart of Somerville's Davis Square. Student housing developer Scape. I guess the goat is silent. I love the names that these companies come up with. Scape has acquired a string of storefronts on Elm Street that are home to several long-standing neighborhood institutions. The British firm, which builds privately run dorms, last month paid nearly $10 million for buildings that house Irish Pub, the Burren, McKinnon's Meat Market, the Sligo Pub. Wait a minute. The Sligo is an old Somerville institution. Nobody's touching the Sligo. You can have the Burren. Nobody's touching the Sligo. And several restaurants, according to a long-term lease filed in Middlesex County earlier this month. Executives with Scape wouldn't say what they have planned, but the firm specializes in building privately run student housing that is independent of any particular school. It's done projects in the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Australia, and has proposed a 15-story building on Boylston Street in Fenway as its first venture in the United States. Quote, "We remain excited to bring an innovative approach to urban living in Boston and beyond," said Andrew Flynn, chief executive at Scape North America. "As we look to potential projects in Somerville, we are fully committed to a transparent process that engages all stakeholders as we move forward on specific plans over the next few years." In other words, if you are a common voter, go kick rocks. That's what they're saying. If you don't vote at all, go kick heavy rocks. Should Scape propose something even half the size of its Fenway project on the 8/10 of an acre site on Elm Street, it would be the largest development in Davis Square in recent years. Rents in the neighborhood have escalated thanks in part to an influx of graduate students and young professionals. But it has retained some of its low-key vibe and long-standing local businesses, such as the Sligo Pub, even as other student-centric areas such as the Harvard Square have changed dramatically in recent years. The businesses in the building Scape acquired remain open, and a spokesman said the company is open to discussions with tenants about them staying put. Owners of the bar, and a popular bar and music club for more than 20 years, did not immediately return a message Tuesday. They did talk to the Boston Business Journal, and they told the Boston Business Journal that they have an agreement in place with Scape. Remember, the goat is silent. It's like Whole Foods, where the ass is silent. The owners of the Burren said they have an agreement in place with Scape to stay open. I don't know about the Sligo. And honestly, I'm way more concerned about the fate of the Sligo than I am the fate of the Burren. Because the Burren, you can pick that up and you can move that anywhere. The Sligo, that's a Somerville institution. You can even have the Meat Market. You can have McKinnon's. And McKinnon's is great, by the way. I'm not saying anything bad about McKinnon's. I think Caramel is in that block over there. What, we're going to lose our macarons and our French pastries now. And the Sligo. Unacceptable. Meanwhile, Somerville has stepped up affordable housing requirements and tenant protection rules in recent years. There are questions about how those regulations might apply to Scape's non-traditional leasing structure, under which residents sign a 51-week lease. I don't know where you live the other week of the year. often for a shared dorm-like suite with full-on site services and amenities aimed at older undergraduate and graduate students. So, what is this? This company, which is bringing its wonderful development projects to the United States, because we asked for this, I guess, builds dormitories, privately run school-independent dormitories. Right, so you go live at Scape, and you get a bed in a suite that you're sharing with other people with a common bathroom. And I guess there's other amenities in there. You know, all the things that you'd find in a dormitory these days, which probably means that there is a computer lounge, a weight room. Maybe there's a small pool somewhere. Who knows? Who knows? All about the amenities in the dormitories now. They want to put up a 15-story version of this in the Fenway. And the Fenway is not having it. The Fenway is fighting this rather aggressively. There is no possible way. No possible way. Somerville, let me take that back. Let me take that back, because I don't want to deal in absolutes. As I know Somerville, it is very unlikely that they're going to let them put up a 15-story building in Davis Square, because that would immediately become the tallest structure, I believe, anywhere in the city of Somerville. Somerville does not do skyscrapers. Somerville has zoning regulations that cap how tall something can be. Are they going to put up something that's 10 stories? That becomes the tallest building in Somerville. So, you've got a block. You've got some space to work with here. The question is going to be, how vertical is this thing? And if Somerville is suddenly open to the idea of 10 or 15-story buildings, yeah, that's a complete game changer for the whole community. And by the way, don't rule it out, because one of the last refuges of scoundrel mayors is to prop up the city budget with building permit fees. So you got a project like this that comes in, that's potentially going to throw $3 million in fees and inspections into the town coffers. That'll keep you in the black for a year, maybe two. And then if you're a smart mayor or a smart town official, you go and get a job somewhere else before the piper has to be paid. Does anybody want this? Do you want a privately run dormitory in the middle of Davis Square? I don't think that's going to do Davis Square any favors. Already there's no parking over there. Already it is... Davis Square, I will say, as somebody who's been frequenting the square since the 1980s, since I was a student at Boston University. We used to go over to the Somerville Theater and see things, and occasionally go to Davis Square on the weekends and see what was happening. Harvard Square used to be the destination if you were in high school, if you were in college, if you were in junior high. Back in the 1980s, back in the 1990s, that's where all the kids went. That's where all the cool kids hung out. You went and you hung out at Harvard Square, and you met cool kids from all over the state, and it was awesome. Now Harvard Square might as well be a strip mall. All of the personality, everything that made Harvard Square unique, is gone. The garage is still there. But everything else in Harvard Square, well, the Coop is still there. But the Coop isn't what it used to be. It's a Barnes & Noble now with a Harvard University gift shop attached to it. If I took you into the Coop in the 1980s, your mind would be blown by how cool that place was. There's still this Curious George store is still there, which is the last piece of the Booksmith empire that still exists. That's a cool store. But everything else in Harvard Square, you walk around and you're like, yeah, this looks like any mall that I would walk into. Oh, here's Urban Outfitters. Oh, here's The Gap. Oh, here's Abercrombie & Fitch. All the unique restaurants and all the unique businesses that once made Harvard Square a magnet for the young have been replaced with what you can find at the mall. So why are you going to come into the city when you can just go to the mall? Davis Square still has all of that going for it. Davis Square still has all of those local businesses. It has the little dive bar, the Sligo. Everybody loves the Sligo. It has the great barbecue place. It has cool little inexpensive restaurants. It has fun boutiques. It has a comic book store. It has an awesome movie theater. Harvard Square used to have two. So there's a lot. So Davis Square has sort of inherited the mantle of what Harvard Square once was. That's where the cool kids go. I was in Davis Square last Saturday with the cool kids watching the new Tarantino movie. And you walk around Davis Square and you're like, there's a lot of cool people hanging around here. There's a pretty vibrant scene over here. A lot of things are happening. You walk around Harvard Square and it's tourists who are like, which way is the Harvard campus? And where can I get a Harvard sweatshirt? It's nothing at all like what it used to be. I can count the legacy businesses in Harvard Square on one hand. Davis Square isn't there yet. You put up a 10-story privately owned dormitory where I'm guessing kids are going to spend $1,200 a month to share a suite with a couple of other people, maybe even share a room with somebody else. Hey, it's cheaper than the rents around here. I'll give you that. But you're going to utterly destroy Harvard Square. Or you're going to utterly destroy Davis Square. Because suddenly you're going to have what? 500, 600, 1,000 people move in who don't know anything about the area, who aren't necessarily concerned with the area, who aren't invested in the area. This is one of the things that drives me nuts about these development crazy cities and towns. What everybody is doing is throwing up apartments. Apartments, apartments, luxury apartments. Because you get great building permit fees off of them. And you get them to throw in a couple of low-income units in the basement with a separate doorway, which is what's going on in some of these towns. And you can say, hey, look, affordable housing. The problem is you invite in this transient population. These people aren't going to stay in these apartments for the rest of their lives. They're not invested in your community. They don't care about your community. They're there just to have a roof over their head and maybe hang around downtown every now and again. I'm not saying every apartment dweller is like this, but I'm saying there is a world of difference between a community of single, maybe multifamily homes, triple deckers, single family homes, townhouses, two family homes, and a community of apartment dwellers. The apartment dwellers do not pay taxes. They're not invested in the same way that the homeowners are. They're not staying for 10, 20, 30 years the way that the homeowners are. It is a stop on the road to wherever they're going. And they come and they ask, you know, where is the McDonald's? Where is the laundromat? Where is the chain bar that has $5 margaritas on Friday? And they show little to no interest in the local community because they don't plan on staying. They're not coming to town, oh, rent here for a little while and then buy. No, they're here for a set amount of time and then they're moving on to somewhere else. Or there are millennials who just don't want to own anything. It is not good for communities when large amounts of apartment space come in. It is damaging to communities. Now, in this case, in Davis Square, it's not like you're kicking out homeowners. You're not ripping down houses to put up apartments or this dorm thing that Scape is going to build. But what you are doing is you are bringing in a deliberately transient population. This is meant for college students, okay? College students have already taken over a lot of the neighborhoods here around Tufts. And you look at those neighborhoods and you look at those houses, and generally speaking, you can spot them because they aren't as well kept as the other houses around. The people who are living there aren't, you don't see them out and around. They're either at school or studying or gone away somewhere for the weekend. They're not part of the community. And they have no long-term investment in the community. And that's not a good thing. That's something Somerville should think long and hard about before they allow one of these things to go up in Davis Square. Because Davis Square, I will tell you, is a vanishing jewel. It is a true neighborhood. It is a true center of community activity. And we don't have many of those left here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. 855-915-9636. is the telephone number on the Tell Mikey D is going to be coming your way at 9 o'clock tonight. Everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Later on tonight, I know I promised that I was not going to talk about the presidential election. The debates happened last night. I have to talk about this. It gives me no joy to talk about this. And I'm not going to talk so much about the candidates or any of that, but just sort of some of the general stuff that happened during that, whatever that was last night. We'll talk about that too. But before that, this should be doing the thing.
No why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. If you've been outside, you know that the temperature has changed pretty radically in the last couple of hours. The storms came through, the temperature dropped by 20 degrees. It's still not what I would call pleasant outside, but it's a lot nicer than it was. And what you see right now is pretty much what you're going to get for tonight. Mostly cloudy skies. May still be some showers around here and there. Lows are only going down into the 70s. Then tomorrow we warm up a bit. Highs in the mid-80s. Humidity will be lower. Notably, not as dry as it's going to get, but notably lower. Highs fall back into the upper 60s Thursday night. Friday, mostly sunny, around 80 degrees, low humidity. Low about 70 degrees on Friday night. You know what that means. Saturday, we're going to start turning the steam dial back up again. Highs in the mid-80s, a little more humid. Lows around 70 degrees, and then on Sunday, humid. High around 80 degrees, lows in the mid-60s Sunday night, and we're kind of stuck in that. It's not going to be super hot. No heat waves on the horizon. But we are going to be stuck in that kind of humid 80-degree weather, at least the nights. Well, no, because, I mean, we're looking at nighttime lows of like 70 degrees for a while. So maybe we have another one of the hottest months on record. July was the hottest month in Massachusetts history, for those of you who are wondering. Hottest month in Massachusetts history. 855-915-9636. We will be back in just a bit here on WMFO Medford.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Summer day.
Be an alert shopper. Watch for specials at your meat counter. If you're not taking advantage of them, you could be missing out on enjoyable eating and an economical way of stocking your freezer. Always know what cut you're buying and its best use. If you buy meat marked USDA Prime, Choice, or Good, you'll know what quality you're getting. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight, when On the Town with Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 remains the telephone number. I remain committed to asking you not to call the telephone number because it's just me tonight and trying to answer phones and talk and collect my thoughts and log everything and do everything that I am required to do as a producerless DJ. Yeah, they call us DJs even when we're not spinning records all night. It's a bit much, is all I'm going to say. Not that I don't want to hear from you, not that I don't love to hear from you. Maybe we'll come up with a social media feedback option. What do you think of that? I've been weighing that as a possibility. Anyway, if you did not watch the presidential debate last night, don't feel bad. Because not many people did. The overnight ratings for this one came in at about 10 million people. And that was down by a third on a hot, blistering summer night across most of the country. That rating was down a third from the June debates on NBC and MSNBC. Now, you can make the argument that it's on CNN and nobody watches CNN, and you'd be right. I don't know if they, I guess they promoted it outside CNN. I can't recall if they did or not. Certainly people were talking about it on the internet yesterday, but no one watches CNN. And let's be honest about this. If you're going to try and prop up, I don't agree with the president on a lot of things, but I agree with him on some things. If you're going to prop up Don Lemon as a debate moderator, yeah, people are going to tune out. Okay, Don Lemon has no business being on television. Okay, Don Lemon, maybe he got a job with Alex Jones ranting about stuff somewhere, but Don Lemon is not a journalist. Don Lemon is not a newsman. Now they got Jake Tapper in there. He's got some cred. All right, he's got some bona fides. Dana Bash is there. She's their political correspondent. She's reasonable. Hey, here's Don Lemon. Where's Anderson Cooper? Where's Wolf Blitzer? Why don't you get somebody with some actual skill and reputation in there and not Don Lemon?